Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey everybody, this is Eric Nam, and welcome to the show, I Think You're Dope, with me, Eric Nam. Today's guest is Jenny Han. She is an incredible, incredible author and human being, and we had never met ever, but we had some great conversations about life, about growing up in the States as Asian Americans, how she started writing, her book deals, how the movie, her movie series, I guess, on Netflix, To All the Boys I Loved Before, became such incredible successes. So we caught up while she was in Korea shooting for the movies, and we had a great time. So hopefully you guys enjoy it as well. Check her out on all of her socials, and please be sure to go ahead and subscribe to our show, I Think You're Dope, on whatever platform you're listening from. And please leave us a great comment, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, you can watch this video on youtube.com/divestudios. So, without further ado, here's my amazing conversation with the incredible, talented, amazing human being, Jenny Han, on I Think You're Dope.
All right, I'm gonna just get us started. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. This is Eric Nam, your host, and I'm incredibly excited and honored to have this incredibly talented woman on this show. I feel like we tricked her into coming on the show. We made it seem very important, because she's a lot more important than we are. She is an author, a producer, and the Korean-American J.K. Rowling. Please welcome Ms. Jenny Han. Hello.
Hi. Hey. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming. How you been?
I'm great.
Yeah,
I'm great. I'm like nervous. You hear the wind outside?
Yeah. Just to give you guys context, we are in the middle of a typhoon.
Literally.
And we're excited. Worried. We really want people to stay safe and be safe. But today, I'm supposed to be flying out to New York. It's been delayed. Outside, it looks like the gates of hell, if I knew what that looked like.
It's like Lord of the Rings, you know, when
that
Eye of Sauron is starting to spin.
It's very dark. A lot of clouds. Things are flying around. And it's supposed to hit right about now, right?
Yes. And my hotel was like, do not leave after noon. And my dad was like, don't go anywhere. And I was like, I gotta go. I gotta go hang out with Eric Nam.
Do the most important podcast in the world. So thank you for risking your entire life.
I'm so happy to be here.
To come. Thank you so much. If you hear things shattering in the background, it may be the typhoon. We'll give you guys live updates as it happens. But let's just jump right into it. So Jenny, you are in Korea. You've been to Korea a good amount of times,
right? A good amount of times, yeah.
Right.
My family, a lot of my family is still here.
Okay. And you're here shooting the third and final part of…
To All the Boys I've Loved Before. This is To All the Boys, Always and Forever, Lara Jean. That's
okay.
The title.
Man, how is it… I mean, if you guys do not know about Jenny, she is a very accomplished author. And her… It's a trilogy of books.
It's a trilogy.
Yes. To All the Boys I've Loved Before. That was probably… It may be like the most streamed movie on Netflix, no?
It might be.
Like, that's a big deal.
It might be a huge deal.
Like, do you get those stats? Do they tell you that stuff?
They are pretty… I think they said something like 80 million on the first like month or so.
That's insane.
But I think we don't know specifics exactly. I think they're a bit more opaque with that information.
Okay. Did you… expect that kind of success?
No way. I mean, it was a huge surprise for that level.
What was your reaction to it when you like…
Oh, I was really overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was coming from, you know, the book world, which I think is much more like of an intimate space between you and your readers.
Right.
And I've been writing books for like 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so I like love my fans. I love the readers. We I have book events and I go to festivals and stuff and we like interact a lot online. So it's very different to suddenly overnight have like a way bigger audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we talk more about the movie and like what you're doing in Seoul, let's get to know you a little more.
Okay.
You know, I tried to do a little Googling on your life and everything and there wasn't a whole lot out there. And so I want to know a little bit more about Jenny Han, like where you're from, how you grew up, your parents, what it was like growing up as a Korean American. So I have some very basic stats here. You were born in Richmond.
That's right.
Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to UNC Chapel Hill and then the New School in New York for your master's. And it says here that you were also a librarian.
That is correct.
When was this?
So after I graduated the grad program, I got that job mostly because it's writing can be a very solitary job. And I liked to be able to have 3 days a week where I knew I was working and I had to wake up at a certain time and be somewhere.
A little bit of structure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I needed the structure. Otherwise, the days could kind of just like melt into each other and I wasn't being that productive.
Okay. Fair enough. So let's talk about this. So you were born in Richmond. Any siblings?
One sister.
One sister. Mm-hmm. Younger? Older?
Younger.
Okay. So you're the oldest. Parents, they immigrated to the States.
Mm-hmm.
When?
In the late 70s.
In the late 70s. Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up and living in Richmond?
You know, it's in the South.
Right.
I actually had a quite big like Korean American community because of church.
Uh-huh.
And so I had Korean school on Saturdays and then like youth group on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like super into my like group.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was and then I was lucky enough, like in middle school I think was a hard time for me a bit because there really weren't many. There's only one other like Asian person in my school.
Wow.
And then so there was a fair amount of like racism and like microaggressions and stuff. And then I ended up applying to go to a different high school where so many of my like church friends also went.
Oh.
And so then it was like, that was like a multicultural school. And I like learned so much about other people's backgrounds too, where I'd never like there, were, I never even got to go to a bar mitzvah. You know what I mean? Like, cause in Richmond, there just weren't really, really wasn't much diversity in my like little subsection. But then I went to high school and was like, oh, my friend was Sikh and my friend was Muslim. I had like a plethora of different kinds of people.
Yeah.
But most of all, there were so many Korean people there.
That's great. I mean, you know, people who know me know that I was also the only Asian kid in my year.
In high school.
In middle school. And then like by the time we graduated, there were like four Koreans and we're like the only Asians in our year. And it was very, very non-diverse group of people. And so going to college and meeting all those people was like such an eye-opening
experience.
And
I think that's the case for so many kids from different backgrounds where it's like you go to college and you have that like awakening experience, right? Where you kind of find your people.
Right.
And
people
who maybe didn't necessarily hang out with like Asian people before
then
go and you're like, wow, like there's so many people like me with a similar like story and you feel like you belong to something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What did your parents do?
So my mom had a store
and
my dad worked at Philip Morris, which is like, you know Philip Morris, right? Like
the tobacco
company. But then they also at the time owned like Kraft and Nabisco.
Oh, cheese and crackers.
Yeah, so at like Christmas we used to get like a gift basket. It would be like Ricola and Oreos and all kinds of good Nabisco treats.
And then like cigarettes.
Not cigarettes. We didn't get cigarettes.
No, okay.
However, I have a lot of Marlboro merch.
Okay. Those used to be everywhere.
What, the merch?
Yeah.
Like I have like a duffel bag of this.
I'm telling you, like
red umbrella.
Well, before like cigarettes were like heavily regulated, I still remember as a kid, like I was like, what is this red and white thing that everybody has?
Yes.
And the Camels. You remember the Camels?
Camels, sure. We had like Camels drinking glasses.
Right. Because and I thought they were like the coolest things. And they're like
no Camel.
Yeah. They're like, you cannot advertise to kids anymore.
I know, it's whack.
And I know
that's
it's
whack.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And when, to think about it, that's probably like 20, 30 years ago that it's like we were being advertised to.
For sure.
As little kids. So your parents, like what was their, I guess, I want to get to like the traditional Korean American immigrant story. Did you feel like you really align and define yourself with that? Or do you feel like it was kind of, I guess it's a little different in middle school if you were very like the only Asian kid. And then in high school, it was a good mix. Maybe you had a good balance. Great.
But I mean, I don't know, because on the weekends, I was always seeing my friends.
So it didn't feel too like...
In school, sometimes it didn't feel great.
Right.
But then I felt like very much a part of something. Like, you know, I had all my crushes at church. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I had my whole little...
Yeah.
I was always excited to go to Korean school on the weekends as I got older.
Yeah.
I could see all my people. But I think I was so lucky in that sense. Uh-huh. I did have a full community.
Okay. That's great. I always felt like... So I think I had a very similar upbringing in that sense. What I always struggled with is I felt like I was living a dual life.
Mm.
Like during the week, it's like my white friends, my school friends. And then on the weekends, it's my Korean friends. And they would never overlap. So people are like, you have a secret life. And you're hiding people from. It's like, no, it's like…
Were they like jealous of each other?
Not even. They were just like, why don't we know your other friends? I'm like, right. Well, I don't want to make you drive an hour outside to go to church with me on the weekend. And so I always felt like I was cheating on my friends or something.
I was always inviting my white friends.
Oh, were you?
And my black friends too, to church.
Uh-huh.
I was like, there's cute guys here. You can go. I was like, I'm a little missionary.
Cute guys and Jesus, you know, we get it all done at the same time. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, so you grew up in Richmond and then you went to North Carolina.
Mm.
What was that move like, that transition?
That was great too, because I was super involved in like the like Korean Christian group.
Uh-huh.
So that was another interestingly enough. Like, I first went to a women's college and I transferred over. And so, which, that I wasn't super happy at that place. But then it was right next to NC State. So all my, like, church guy friends went there. So they would just come pick me up and I would hang out.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
What did you study at UNC?
Psychology and then also English and criminal justice.
Whoa.
So I was, like, a major and then two minors.
So you were, like, heavily overachieving.
Not really.
Two minors?
I mean… I could have done more.
That's because you're a genius.
I could have done more.
It's because you're the Asian J.K. Rowling.
That's one piece of advice I always would want to give to people in college. Is I feel like I didn't utilize enough of the experience.
Really?
Like, I found my people. I was hanging out. Uh-huh. But I wish I had been in doing like the literary magazine or the newspaper or like just more activities. And I think you kind of take for granted that those sort of resources are available to you. And then when you leave, you're going, oh, shoot. Like…
Now I'm in the real world.
Yeah, I'm in the real world. And I can't just join up and try and be in a play.
Right.
You know, like, not in the same way.
Did you do any extracurriculars as a kid? Like, did you play the violin? Did you do any sports?
You know what? Like, I played the piano.
Uh-huh.
And I sucked. I was so bad. It would be so humiliating. Because every Christmas, the church would have, like, the pageant.
Yeah.
And my mom would always sign me up. And I'm like, Mom. And I started hating Christmas. Like, I would… like, in October, I started thinking about it. And I would get so… like, sad, because I really didn't want to have to go on stage.
Aww.
And my mom, you know the Korean, typical Korean, where like, couldn't afford to do piano, so like, this is for you, right? As if it's for me.
Right.
But then…
they live vicariously through
exactly.
us.
Exactly.
By forcing things
But then
on
there
us.
Were people at my church who were so like, good. Uh-huh. Like, Jessica Lee went to Juilliard or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, and she was like 12.
Yeah.
And then I was older than her, and my mom would still make me get up there and do the piano. And I would literally be like, hot cross. You know what I mean? Like, the
crossbow.
And then my mom, God bless her, would be just like,
you do you, know you Jenny.
She was so proud, like, as if I was good, but I wasn't.
Oh, your mom must be so sweet, like, so encouraging. My mom was very just like, you're horrible. We had very different Asian moms.
My mom's like, everything you do is like, oh, you're so good.
Oh, yeah, that's like, amazing. I always said, like, Mom, why can't you be more like my American friend's moms?
Because
she'd be like, you're not, like, your piano's not good. You're not good at cello. Look at look at Michael and look at Christine and look at how they're at Allstate and doing the Governor Honors Program. I was like, well, I'm not that good, Mom. And she's like, clearly.
Were you good, like, at school? Like, a smart kid? Were you, like, honors, APs?
No. I mean, I was in APs. I had honors classes, but I was never the smartest. I was never the best at anything. And that drove my mom insane. And she was like, how can you not be the best? I was like, I suck at everything. Mom, leave me alone.
But now look at you.
I know. Now I'm doing…
Like,
I'm
amazing.
Talking to you.
You're amazing.
I'm doing the best podcast in the world. So, like, this is a big deal. My mom still has moments of, like, why are you doing this? Like, why do you have this job? I'm like, can you please just accept me?
I mean, my mom still will be like, you know what? What if you were like a professor? Like, like, I'm like, mom, no, because friends of mine who teach in colleges, she's like, you could be doing that too. I'm like, I'm good right now.
You're good. You're doing great.
Things are going well. Yeah. But she still would love for me to be a professor.
Right. I think parents always want stability.
Yeah.
And they think professor, lawyer, whatever is the most stable.
And I also think that Korean culture, I don't know, still has that feeling of like scholars or like sort of upper
of hierarchical.
Yeah, like high class people.
Yeah. High class people. Teaching things to kids. So you went to UNC, you studied psychology and English criminology.
Mm-hmm. Criminal justice, yep.
Oh my gosh. And then you moved to New York.
Yeah.
You went straight to New York or how did that work out?
I was then applying for grad programs and jobs and stuff and working at my mom's store to help out. Yeah, it was that was certainly an experience. Because you know in high school, I don't know if your parents were like this. Did either of them have a store or no?
No, they did not.
Okay, so you're not one of the store kids.
I was not a store kid.
Okay, so like the store kids.
Please tell us about the store.
The store kids is like generally, I think there's two different like subsets of the way you are a store kid. Some of them you have to be doing it all the time and like helping out. And some of them are like, you're just supposed to study. You know? And so I was just supposed to study. So I didn't really like help out except for doing the grocery shopping and stuff. Like I would help out with that.
Yeah.
However, then when I was done studying and I was helping, then it was like, this is really
you should
hard.
Be here. All
well,
the time
it's just like,
kind of
and it's good. I wanted to help, but it was inside of a retirement community. So the clientele was all really elderly people. And, you know, it's like,
not the most poppin' place, you know?
Not at all.
What is that like working in a retirement community?
Well, weirdly, I've always had a real, affinity for older communities. Let's just say, because my grandparents live with us.
Oh, okay.
My mom had that store. I volunteered at a nursing home in college.
Okay.
And so that actually ends up in a lot of my books. In To All the Boys I've Loved Before, she volunteers at like a nursing home, like a retirement community. And I've always just been really drawn to older people's stories. I'm so curious. And I think I was particularly hungry for it as a child of immigrants because, you know, growing up in America, you get really curious about what the American experience was like in the 50s and the 60s.
Right.
And like, I would go to my friend's house and be like asking the mom and be like, where were you when JFK was shot? You know, and I would just want to like chill with her.
Yeah.
And my friend would be like, come upstairs. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, no, I just want to know more about this.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think hearing people's stories is so valuable. And that's what's interesting to me about hanging out with older people.
No, I find that completely valid. I remember when I was a kid, they called me like the little reporter in my neighborhood because I would go around like every house just to like talk to parents. Be like, what's going on? And they were like, why is this like 8-year-old talking to us about like school politics? I'm like, I don't know. But for me, because I'm the oldest, my parents can speak English very well. And so everything was expected to be done on my own. And so when everybody has their parents going to teacher conferences, I was there like translating and like having to explain everything.
Yes, boy. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so, and then like field trips and paper forms, like they have no idea what
that is. There's always stress involved with that.
Right. And so for that, I was like, okay, well, I need to go and get street smart with my neighborhood so that like I can figure out how to survive in this community.
Same.
See? Yeah.
I was always the favorite of all the friends. Like, you know what I mean? The moms are always like, you're my favorite. I'm like, thank you. But it was just like that. And I remember, you know, my mom had a store. And so she would sometimes come home like pretty late. And I remember on Thanksgiving, you remember how as a kid you, like there's all these activities leading up to Thanksgiving where you're like making the turkey hand and like doing plays and stuff. And I'm into cooking. I've always been into cooking. Mm-hmm. And I remember, my mom got the turkey. Everything was going to be all set to go, right? She goes to work. And then she comes back home. And I'm like, what time is like the turkey going to be ready? When are we eating? And she had forgotten to put the turkey in the oven. Because you know, Korean people don't cook turkey.
We don't do turkey.
And it's hours long. It's an hour-long affair. And I remember crying so hard and like throwing myself into my mom's bed. And just be like, everything is ruined. It's all ruined. And then my mom felt so bad that she went to her neighbor's house and got me a plate. And then I was like I literally was in her room just like eating it by myself.
I got my turkey.
Like literally like just like eating it so like a golem Like, you know what I mean? Like, so, like, selfishly. And my sister didn't get a plate. It was just me eating by myself in her room. But it was those kind of, like, you put that significance on these childhood things where you're like, oh, it's really important. Halloween needs to go a certain way, or, like, Thanksgiving. And it's, like, not their fault. They don't know. Right. You know what I mean? They're doing the best they can do. But when you're, like, 7 years old, it feels like a really big loss.
It feels like a personal attack. And you understand. It's, like, they don't. They've never done it. Like, and it's like, we're the first child as well.
Yes, so, and like, then we're sort of like setting the pathway
right.
for our siblings in many ways too.
Right, right.
To make
right.
it cool for them. It's like, now we're all good for Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
Like, Halloween's going smoothly.
Right.
Everything's…
right. Everybody's got their costumes, got their gifts, is not left out at school.
Exactly. And I was like, put out the candy. Grandma has to sit mm-hmm. at the door with a candy. We can't be the house that doesn't have a candy.
Right. We want to be a cool house. You're not the one that smells just like japchae and bulgogi all the time.
I never minded that part.
I loved it, but they're like, there's like, we want that japchae? I'm like, what? Okay, come over. And they're like, we want seaweed. And
sometimes they just want a bowl of rice and some soy sauce right. they would want.
I don't get that.
No, I don't get that.
We're telling it to you now, if you're doing rice with just soy sauce, you're doing it wrong. No. I like don't say it when people do it in front of me, but I'm like, that's so wrong.
It's whack. Like, what you can do is a sunny side up egg.
Yeah, you delicious. Can do an egg.
A little bit of sesame oil.
Right.
Some, you know, then you can do some soy sauce.
Right.
A little butter.
Yeah, but if it's just soy sauce,
no.
That's an atrocity. Mm-mm. That is an affront Mm-mm. to the rice people.
Don't
so
do it.
Don't do it. I'm just letting you know.
A little spam.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. You know, great. So you graduate, you go home, you help your parents for a little bit.
A little bit.
And then what happens?
And then I ended up getting into this master's program for writing, mm-hmm. creative writing. And I moved to New York.
Mm.
And I never left.
You never left. Mm-hmm. And you loved it? Did you fall in love with the city? Like, did
Completely.
You always want to live there?
Or? No. It always felt like kind of intimidating.
Uh-huh.
But then, you know, I just had the plan and I went. And weirdly, the most intimidating part of moving to New York always was like a mattress. It was like the logistical things where I'm like… Yeah, I would love to do an internship in New York, but how am I going to afford to work for free?
Right.
And then where am I going to get a bed from? And uh-huh. like, you know what I mean? Just those kind of things.
Right.
And then because I was doing the grad program, I lived in the dorm and I was an RA. So that was all set. But I think those kind of things can get in your head about
right.
making that big of a move somewhere.
Right. I mean, in many ways, there's so many people, but you also feel so alone, especially if you're not from New York.
Sure.
So it's very daunting.
Yeah.
I imagine. So you went for creative writing. Did you always want to be a writer? Was that the dream? Was that the goal?
You know, it wasn't that I always wanted to be a writer. It's that I always was a writer.
Oh, okay.
Like, I was always writing stories, reading books. And I just never knew that it was possible, honestly. Uh-huh. Like, I never met a writer.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you look at the backs of books and you see the pictures of the authors,
uh-huh.
it was always like an older, like, white person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I just never saw that as a possibility. Because uh-huh. it also seems like… And to my parents' credit, they were so supportive of this.
Oh.
You know, when I went to grad school, it was like I took out loans. And it's kind of nerve-wracking in that sense. Because if I was taking out loans to go to law school or teacher's college or something,
right.
you know that most likely you'll be able to find a job.
Right.
But if you get your master's in creative writing, it's like you may or may not.
Right.
You don't have no idea whether or not you'll sell a book.
Yeah.
But my mom was like, you have a talent. You've got to like go for it. We believe you're going to make it,
uh-huh.
you know? And there was no, if they were worried about it, they didn't tell me.
Uh-huh. That's amazing. Your mom sounds like such a supportive mom. I love my mom, guys. I'm just saying, like, it's just, it's very refreshing, honestly, because for me, like, I think my mom, not that she was not supportive of everything, but like, she's very realistic. She's very
mm-hmm,
practical.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when I called home, I was like, I want to study sociology and history. She was like, say what?
What are you going to do with that?
She's like, yeah, what
right.
what is that? Like, history. Like, you just read books. Like, what are you going to do? And I was like, oh, okay. So, to hear that, I mean, because I feel like there's two types of Asian parents. There's mine. They're like, be practical, be realistic. You got to make money kind of thing. And then there are your parents where it's like, we support whatever. Your creative writing, like that kind of thing.
I think it was because of, and I think… We're talking about two similar things that are just like different sides of the same
yeah.
coin, which is that being the oldest and being responsible for many things at a young age, they always says, oh, you know better than us.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So whatever, you always like know the
mm-hmm.
right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's immense pressure with that. At the same time, like I always felt like strongly that I knew what was best for me.
Uh-huh.
And they were supportive of that because they're like, we don't know we're from Korea. Like, you know better what you can do here.
Right, right. No, I agree with you on that latter point. Definitely. I think when I made the transition to become a singer here, they were like, we don't like it, but like we trust you.
Sure. Exactly.
And that's mm-hmm. that's the thing. It's a big basis on trust. So you were always a writer. You grew up reading and writing all the time.
Like crazy. Yeah.
What was your like inspiration? Do you remember like some of your earlier works, like as a kid or?
Yeah, I won first prize for a book called The Dream.
The Dream. Okay.
And it's about a girl who moves to New York City and her sister is like a brat. And this is a theme in all my books, is a sister is a brat. And then she wakes up and it was all a dream. So I really gave away the whole plot in the title. I still won first prize in my classroom.
What? How old were you?
I was 7. Oh, I wrote and illustrated that myself. My next foray was called Santa's Christmas Caper.
Okay.
And it was all about the toys get stolen and Santa has to like figure out where they went.
So this is from a very young age. You were just always creatively juicing things out.
I was. And then as I got older, there's less time for creative pursuits in high school and stuff. But I still was writing my own little like personal fan fiction of my life.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like me and my friends from church and we like, what's it like when we're in college? Or like we're on a ski trip. Or here we are at a reunion.
I feel like you were like writing your future. Like
kind of things
that you wanted to do. Things that places you wanted to go.
Yeah.
Like you were doing it. And you kind of made it happen with your real life as well.
A little bit.
That's awesome. It's kind of crazy.
Oh. Wait, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Were you like praise band leader? What was your deal?
I was not. I was in a praise band for like a few months.
Mm-hmm.
For me, church was far away. Like, I lived probably 45 minutes, sometimes an hour away from church. And so in order to do that, I would have to go Friday and Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And so I did it for a few months in the summer. I was like, all right, peace, God. I'm going to do this some other time. But I always had this thing where I was like, I don't know. This can sound really weird. But when if you go to church sometimes and you're watching a praise band or like something, you're like, I could do that. I could do that better than you. I mean,
you know what? Actually, come to think of it, no, I was never in a praise band because I'm like not a good singer. But I feel like I remember bringing my college friends to my home church one time to pick me up on the way to school, and like my friend Dan, I remember him being like, "I can do that. I'm better than them."
I mean, it's probably like for you, like if you read a piece of bad writing, you're like, "This won an award. I could do that." Do you ever have that? You definitely do.
No.
Yes, there definitely is. See, that's like the same thing. It's like I'm at churches. I'm like, oh, cool. I could definitely do better than that. I don't know.
All the same to God, right?
It's all the same to God. He doesn't care.
He just loves your intention.
It. Yes, it's the truest form of intention. Now, having said that, when you have a bad praise leader, it can really ruin your Sunday.
True.
It can really throw your entire Sunday off. For me, I think because I am a musical person, if I go to church and the praise is bad, like I just feel bad.
Mm.
I'm like, I feel attacked sonically.
Do you like prefer more contemporary or more traditional?
I prefer more contemporary, but if it's going to be bad contemporary, I'd rather just be traditional.
Yeah.
I'd rather just do a hymn where it just repeats the same melody 30 times.
Than
have to listen to your, wow, Jesus. I will walk out. And then I'll come back in for the sermon. I can't. I really can't. God, I just shared a little too much, but that's fine.
We can cut it.
We're going to put that out there. So you go to New York, you graduate. What did you do after you graduated?
Well, I sold my book while I was in school.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that was very fortunate for me. My path was like a fortunate path.
Man, what year were you in grad school? Was it like towards the end or like?
No, actually it was like, right.
So you like didn't even need to go to grad school. You could have just been like, oh, I'm done.
Well, it was, you know what it was knowing that I had to submit pages every week, learning how to receive criticism, give criticism. I think I don't think you need to go to grad school. I don't think that's like necessary. However, I think it is necessary to learn how to get critical feedback and say like to take in, you know, the note underneath the note too. Uh-huh. Like they could be like, you should do this. And you're like, I don't want to do that. But you can sense that something isn't working with what you're doing.
And figure it out in your own sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. What really inspired you in terms of writing? Not only like topically or thematically, but like were there particular authors or figures in your life? Or
I mean, I just read everything. You know what I mean? And I would go to the library every single day after school because my mom couldn't pick me up from work until like after she closed the store. So I would just be there for hours. Mm-hmm. So I read the whole like teen section and I was like reading like most of the adult section at a young age. I was there for like 4 hours every day.
Oh my gosh.
So
I was reading like Goosebumps and like Animorphs.
Those are fun.
They were great. Did you read like Babysitter's Club?
Yeah, I love Babysitter's Club. Yeah, there's going to be a TV show. Did you hear that?
I did not know
on
that.
On Netflix, yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. What else did you read?
So I definitely read Babysitter's Club. I read all the Stephen King books.
Oh, wow.
I was going a little bit.
That's like a…
I was like 9 years old and I'm reading like It. And I'm like, what is happening? Like, what is this?
Uh-huh.
But then I was like, okay, I mean, just like storytelling is so good.
Yeah.
I think I have a theory that like before young adult as a genre like existed, it was pretty much like Stephen King was that kind of gateway into older books because he wrote about young people so beautifully. Mm-hmm. And he continues to write about young people so beautifully. He's still with us.
Right.
But I just admire that he, and what he's so great at is taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. It's not like, I think some people approach content for younger people as if it's not as important or you don't have the same respect for it. And I think his storytelling was all the same if it was adults, if it was kids, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. So your first book was a book called Shug. Shug Knight. Okay, and you wrote that in college.
Yes.
You also, your second book was Clara Lee and the Apple Pie Dream.
Yes, it was.
Is that about?
That's about, it's actually sort of like a love letter to my grandpa.
Oh, okay.
We were really, really close.
Uh-huh.
And he and my grandma live with us.
Uh-huh.
So the story is about a little girl who's really close to her grandpa and her bratty little sister.
Let's talk about your sister real quick. Who is she? What does she do?
I love my sister so much.
Are you sure?
My sister is like my favorite person in the world.
Okay.
But, you know, she has inspired me a lot. Uh-huh. Like Kitty and To All the Boys is definitely, there's a lot of inspiration from my sister. Uh-huh.
Does she live in New York as well? Or?
No.
Okay. But you guys stay in touch.
Yes.
And that's good. That's funny. Is there a reason you were doing children's books or…
You know, I think I've always been drawn to coming of age stories. Mm-hmm. I think that the first time is, to me, as a storyteller, the most like narratively compelling time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the middle you forget most of. And the last time you never really know if it's going to be the last time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the first time that you fall in love or the first time that you have your heart broken, all that stuff just sticks with you your whole life. People don't forget that.
Right.
You know, and people forget a lot of the middle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I just find that to be interesting. Not to say that I wouldn't do stories about other ages or whatever, but that's kind of like a home base for me.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And it clearly, Clara Lee is Asian in this book. I feel like at that point, and maybe even now, there's still a lack of representation when it comes to just Asian characters in general. Mm-hmm. Was that a very cognizant, like, intentional thing for you?
Absolutely. I mean, nobody wanted to publish that book.
Really?
Yes. And that, you know, like, that, it was like, I remember talking to somebody who was a higher up, I won't say where, and she was like, and she was Asian, but she was like, people don't want to read books about Asian kids.
That's so crazy.
I know. She was like, they don't want to do it. And I was like, well, I'm still doing it.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, well, it's like a numbers game. People, it's not going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be a flop. And just know that. And so I was like, I don't really care. Honestly, I was like, I don't care if it's a flop. I just care that the kids who need it, get it. So even if it's like only a couple hundred kids who see the book, then I'm willing to just do it for that reason.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to harp too much on this topic because I feel like it's such a hot topic and you probably talked about it a billion times. But when it comes to representation and Asians in media and whatever platform it is, how have you seen it really change over the past few years throughout your career? And what do you kind of see in the future for it?
I think I've always tried to be really thoughtful and strategic about things. Uh-huh. Because from that experience with Clara Lee, knowing that people weren't going to say yes to it, and eventually someone did say yes to it, wanting to get to a place where I can do whatever I want and people will want to buy it. And then I think when you gain the trust of readers to say, like, listen, this might not be the story that I'm used to or that feels familiar to me, but because I, like, trust you and I like your stuff, then I'll go for
it.
Give
it a chance.
And I felt like with To All the Boys, that was definitely, for me, I thought the story has a lot of, like, effervescence to it. It has a lot of just, like, lightness that people, I think, will be drawn to this character. And even if you subconsciously don't want to read books about people of color, and I think people, a lot more people don't than people realize, because I'll start over. Okay. I think subconsciously people think when they see a book cover with a non-white person, people think it's going to be like a more of a tough read. And they're like, oh, I just want to be at the beach and like have a light read.
Right.
Because for so long, stories about people of color have been all about our pain. And that's what people want, is like our pain. Our, like, how is it so hard
the
to
struggle.
Be like Asian? Or how is it so hard to be, you know, Black American? And then it's like a slave story, or it's a story about, you know, I'm like embarrassed about the food that I bring to school. And that's the kind of things that people would publish, because that's what the assumption was. Everything was going to be that sad story.
Right.
And I just think this should be all kinds of stories where you could just have a story about a girl falling in love for the first time or whatever. And the story isn't just about being Asian. Like, it's a part of her identity, but it's not the whole of her identity.
Right. And that's what I think I personally really loved about To All the Boys. I think I told you when we first met, you know, my brother and I, we got home, we're like, let's watch something on Netflix, turned it on, and it was just like the first thing that I was like, oh, let's give it a try. And for us, it was, oh, there's an Asian girl, let's try it. And we watched the entire thing in silence for like 2 hours, and we ended, and we literally just looked at each other. It's like, that was great. That's like literally, and he goes, yeah, that was really good. And we were like, I'm like 30. Am I allowed to like this kind of thing? Like, but we really liked it. And I think what I liked so much was that it was just a love story. It had very little to do with the fact that Lana or the character is Asian. There were little hints of it, like of the Yakruta and like the little things of being Asian, but it felt so normal. And that's what I think we need now. Just like, we're not exoticized, we're not in pain, we celebrate life just the way it is.
Just like humans.
Yeah.
Right? And I think to me it was like, I want people to know that there's many different ways to look as an all-American girl. It's not just one way. You know? So people, I think that's just, to me, the takeaway is that we're all like just humans. And I'm hoping, I mean, I think I was so happy that the movie did well. I just hope it'll continue to like open more doors for people, you know, and so we get different kinds of things. Like, I want to see our pain too. I want to see everything.
Right.
Right. And I want to see, you know, different kinds of Asian stories and like whatever. Like, that's the hope, is that you can't have one movie be bearing the burden to tell everybody's story. It's just like not possible. And then I think specificity is what makes a story good, right? Is that it feels like this person's story.
Right.
But if you try to tell everybody's story, you're not going to be telling a good story.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that's probably, you know, I'd say To All the Boys and Crazy Rich Asians last year, they were just massive in terms of just getting Asians out there and like representation, and like hopefully in terms of casting and like future slates for production, it probably really moved the needle on. And I think for some people who critiqued either movie or any Asian character out there, you know, there's always the thing of, well, that's not me.
Right.
Like, yes, well, it doesn't have to be you. There are billions of Asians in the world. There are billions of stories. So not everything is going to relate to you directly. In the same way, Crazy Rich Asians did not do well in Asia, because in Asia, that story just didn't connect with people.
Well, I think because in Asia, people are used to seeing themselves
in
on
that
the screen.
Way, yeah.
And then we were like, I mean, I definitely teared up at the theater when I saw it.
Right.
Just out of like, wow, like it's cool to see this many Asian people in a movie in America. It felt like a moment.
A momentous kind of occasion.
Yeah,
yes,
for sure.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about To All the Boys then. I read that it took a few years for it to get sold and into production. Was that just like the craziest experience of?
You know, it's funny because I think things have accelerated. In some ways, it's taken so long. In some ways, the movement like accelerated really quickly. Where, you know, Oscar So White happened on Twitter, the hashtag,
right?
With Reign of April. And that made people talk about stuff in a way that people had not been talking. And I think a lot of times people can look down on Twitter movements and say, it's just a hashtag. And like, what are you doing? Well, that was doing a lot because suddenly, you know, her work as an activist got so many articles, you know, everywhere. And people were talking about like, whoa, this is something that we haven't really considered the way we should. And it kind of shamed people, I think. And I think that helped a lot. I think that that was, so when I was first trying to sell it as a movie, that was pre Oscar So White, and people did not understand. They didn't even occur to them that she should be Asian. Literally did not occur to them, even though I'm Asian, the character's Asian, the book cover is an Asian girl. I would talk about casting and then they would be naming like white actresses. And I was like, oh, but she's Asian. And then one producer said to me like, well, you know, I feel like as long as she, the like she gets the spirit of the character, and then the age and like ethnicity and race, that doesn't matter as long as the spirit is there. I'm like, the spirit is Asian American.
She's Asian American.
Yeah, so like that spirit. And so I had to say no a bunch of times. I said no many times throughout the process. You know, it's not something I like talk about all that much. I guess it's come up definitely during the press of the movie and stuff, but it was like sort of disheartening in many ways to have it not be understood of why that was a problem.
Well, I, you know, I'm so glad that you're there vocalizing like the importance of it being Asian American, and you're probably the one of the few people who are able to say like guided in the right way, so it's true to Asian American experiences and identity. So thank you for doing that.
Oh,
I think
that's
incredibly important.
I mean, thanks. I mean, it's not. I definitely had moments where I said to people, like, I don't really need, I'm fine doing what I'm doing with my books or whatever. I don't need to have, like, a movie to that degree. You know what I mean? Like, and I think for an author, a movie is always the dream because the movie is basically just a commercial for your books. Right?
Right.
And so that's great. But, like, I don't need that badly to where I'm going to take something that isn't true to what the story was.
Let's talk about the casting real quick. So, Lana Condor. Did I pronounce that right?
It's Lana.
Lana Condor and Noah Centineo.
Centineo.
Man, I'm really killing it with these pronunciations. Lana Condor and Noah Centineo. I assume you guys have gotten really close through movies.
Well, it's sort of like camp in a way. You know what I mean? We're, and this is my first time being on movie sets, and especially for like this long periods of time, and actually getting to produce. Like, you get into a mentality of, all that matters right now is the thing that we're making. And you get so tight within your, like, crew. Which I'm sure it must be similar in ways with, like, movie, I mean,
with
music
albums
making.
Yeah.
Where you're just all trying to make something good.
Common cause.
Yeah. And then, so everyone from, and that's what I really appreciated the most, was from people from Transpo who are driving, you know, me to set every day, and Lana. You're going, wow, like every person's role is really important and everyone's taking it seriously. And for me, that was so humbling. Like I got like teary eyed a couple of times just by seeing all the people that are working on this, who've been working on this and who respect the material to that degree where they're going to like treat it, you know, with so much care.
Right. So yeah, you have an amazing cast, amazing crew, amazing team behind the entire thing. You're now wrapping it up. Have there been tears?
There's definitely been tears.
Yeah.
There have definitely been a lot of tears.
On your behalf or on everybody's?
Everybody cries. I think Noah's night, there were a lot of tears. I wasn't there. I saw everyone's like videos. Sad to have missed it. But it'll be a wrap on the whole thing really soon. I think when you go a wrap on all three movies, it just feels like almost like a TV show because it's been
A few years.
A few, like, of time together. And it'll be, I think it'll be probably emotional this week because we're wrapping this week.
Yeah. I'm so excited for the second one. That comes out February 2020.
Yes.
Correct. And then when's the third one?
That has not been announced or I don't even think decided yet.
Okay. So still working on it.
Yeah.
What was it? Did you personally get to choose Lana and Noah or like were you involved in that process?
So I had given them like names early on mm-hmm. and Lana was definitely like my top choice. So okay. I kept on like, what about Lana?
Uh-huh.
And there was one moment where I even on my Instagram, I put up a picture of her
uh-huh.
That was like a really cute photo of her like wearing a headband and sitting at like a soda fountain looking really 1960s. And I posted it just kind of like to Inception
yeah.
a little bit because people yeah. are like, oh my gosh, she'd be a cute Lara Jean. I'm like, right?
Really? You what?
You know, and to get her in people's
right
heads.
Atmospheres.
At that point, she had been in X-Men.
Right,
as
she
Jubilee.
Had been, yeah.
But she hadn't been anything else yet. And so I just kind of was like putting her on my fans' radar, at least
right.
for Lara Jean.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept bringing her up to the producers and stuff too. But
uh-huh.
I think people, they ask for your input mm-hmm. or whatever. And I've gotten more, you know, of a say as mm-hmm. I've been working more as a producer. But generally, you know, when you sell your book,
life rights in perpetuity.
It's like then they get to make their version of
mm-hmm.
of it, and that's their vision
mm-hmm.
of what that's going to be. And I think for me, I don't feel particularly in my feelings about mm-hmm. that part of it, because I do think the book is the book, and that will always exist
mm-hmm.
as the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I think for readers, whatever your movie is in your own head is going to be the best movie.
Yeah.
You know, because your imagination is going to make it
right.
amazing. But then the movie is going to be the filmmaker's vision in their minds.
Right.
And so it's just kind of like accepting that there's different sort of versions mm-hmm. of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never really thought about it that way. It is really, as a reader, as you read it, you're picturing, like I do a thing where I start reading a book and I like literally make a mental image of mm-hmm. who this person is. And this person is just like doing all the actions in
mm.
it. And so I don't know, maybe I'm just, I hope I'm not the only one.
I don't think you're the only one. I don't do that personally.
Uh-huh.
Physically, it's never that important to me. It's uh-huh. more like I can see like a vague
outline
yes,
of a person.
But it's really more internal that I'm in deep.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, so now you're wrapping it up. What's next for you? Like, what's, I'm sure you have a billion projects. I'm sure you have like crazy offers. Are you, any new books coming out? Like, what's going
on? I'm really busy.
Yeah.
Of stuff I can't talk about.
Oh, so many secrets. That's good,
yeah.
though. That's really good. That's
I
a great sign. Yeah.
I personally feel like in my writing and also just in life, it's nice to keep whatever you're working on as close to you for as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know what it's going to be yet. And I think it has all the possibility in the world mm-hmm. when you're still creating it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you show something too soon, then people like have an opinion about it or
feedback
idea. And you kind of just want to make what you're going to make. And then people can like it or not like it.
Right.
But I think it's important to be really protective of your creative mm-hmm. process.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'm excited to see whatever comes
Thank
next.
You.
We'll share it off camera. And you guys can be jealous because you have no idea.
I'll tell you everything.
Yes. It's, you know, also very well known. And I've also heard through you personally and through friends that you are a big K-drama fan.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite all-time
man.
K-drama?
Oh, Lord.
I know. I'm going to put you in that
all
position.
All-time, I'm doing some, like, old blood
uh-huh.
K-dramas. Like, Samsuni I love.
Okay, Samsuni.
Yeah.
That was, wait, when
it's
was
old
that?
School.
Diane, you like that? Yeah.
Yeah, it's old school. I love, like, that and then, like, Memories of Bali, which is really old school, which is, like, the K-drama of all K-dramas where it's kind of like there's a murder. There's like
there's everything happening.
There's like, yeah, it's really dramatic.
Uh-huh.
My favorite guy, Cho In-sung.
Okay.
Yeah, he's
okay,
like
okay.
my dude. And then I also love, of more recent times, I loved like Answer Me 1997.
Uh-huh. Great. Great
I
one.
Loved, I What else have I watched really recently? Oh, Alone in Love.
Alone in Love?
Yeah, it's like a more of a deep cut.
Okay, I don't know that
more
one.
More grown-up one.
Okay.
But old school Coffee Prince for sure. Gung, I love.
You've watched all of them.
I've watched almost like, I have a list, a little Word doc of uh-huh. all the ones I've watched because uh-huh. I broke my ankle 1 year and then I was
Ouch.
Laid up for like a long time. Oh, Boys Over Flowers, of course, of course. Where I've watched a full, like, month and a half straight of dramas.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, I, of my life.
Wow.
Of, if it was, like, back-to-back hours.
Yeah.
Now, I think I've watched, like, 35 dramas.
Wow. We, you should write an encyclopedia.
I know.
On K-dramas.
I have a lot of, like, thoughts.
Or, like, you should do a, you should do a podcast on K-dramas.
I mean.
And just talk people through it.
There's a great website called Drama Beans. That everyone knows if you were into
Drama
the,
Beans. Yeah.
Yeah, Drama Beans.
You should run it.
It's very addictive. It's already well run.
If you could write a K-drama, what would the opening scene be?
Whoa. Opening scene? I probably would want to do one, a high school one.
A high school
one.
You
know what I mean? Yeah. Set in like Busan, where my family's from.
Uh-huh.
Which is probably why I like Answer Me 1997 so much.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, in, as evidenced by To All the Boys, I do love, like, contract dating as a trope in K-dramas.
Okay.
It's a common trope. Because it's, like, really nice when you have two people who would never end up together, who have get stuck together.
Right.
So that could be because you're stuck in a house together, like, in Full House with that contract. It could be because you're, like, you know, working together and you have to pretend, like, what is that, Big Love? Where they
know.
Had to pretend they were a couple. You know what I mean? All the pretending stuff is so fun because then you have like the
constant conflict.
Constant conflict. And you've got the like this story happening and then you've got the like the underneath story.
The undercurrents.
Yeah, where like their true feelings are starting to like bubble up.
They develop and how do they show that?
I like the fighting ones too.
I can't wait for the day you do a K-drama.
Oh my God, that would be a dream come true.
I will watch
truly
from beginning to end.
A dream come true because I mean, my one note of criticism to K-dramas is sometimes I feel like it goes too long and it feels like the story could be wrapped up sooner.
Right.
But it's going and going and then someone always goes to Italy or France.
Yeah, and that's the end.
Some, and then they come back in 7 years. And
that drives me crazy.
Amount of time they've been gone.
Yeah.
So it's like the tension goes up, 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 and then it kind of like flatlines.
And
it goes up, up, flatlines.
Yeah. What was it? Perigude.
I didn't watch that one.
You don't watch that one? I think like in that one too is like, he disappears and he comes. I was like, what the heck? Like, again? Like, you guys couldn't come up with a better end? Just kill somebody off! Like, maybe I'm just very extreme in that sense. But I agree with you, all to say. I feel like people who have heard the name Jenny Han or maybe listen to this podcast or love the movie or your books, there is a 20, 30-year-old... No, not 30-year-old. There's like a 20-year younger Jenny Han somewhere.
Hmm.
You know, there's people who look to you as inspiration and can say, I want to be like her and I want to write a great novel or a great book and a movie or whatever. Like, what do you have as words of encouragement or advice to them?
I think I would say that what makes you unique is your voice and the way that you look at the world,
mm-hmm.
your point of view. And I think it would be about really honing in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I'm sure that must go for music as well. It's like, mm-hmm. what makes you special is,
right.
it's not about the best voice or best style or best songwriting. It's really about how you are able to bring people into your world and make mm-hmm. them see through your eyes
right.
and feel connection. And that's all I ever want to do is to have someone read a story that I'm telling and feel like they can connect to the characters,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it feels real to them.
Uh-huh.
So I think, that's the advice I would give is just to really work on that, on understanding what your point of view is. And that means, I think, reading a lot and mm-hmm. watching a lot of stories and listening to music and listening to people and really being like somebody who's empathic,
mm-hmm.
you know? And what's it like to walk in that person's shoes?
Yeah.
It's so much of storytelling.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, no, I…
Empathy.
Empathy. Underlying, the big keyword for today is empathy.
Empathy, yeah.
Which is, I love that word. I just feel like people don't think about it enough.
Yeah. And I think I'll say that as much struggle there is with being a kid of immigrants mm-hmm. and things that you go through and trying to like help out their parents and like mm-hmm. language barriers and stuff, I think you do develop almost like a superpower in the sense of being hyper attuned to people around you and like, you know, like just sensing a mood.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Your nunchi, like, I think really, nunchi. Like, develops super acutely.
Right.
Because you're having to sort of go back and forth between different cultures.
Right.
and understanding like what it's like at home and at school and with these parents' friends versus the Korean parents' friends right. and all that. And I think that's something that would serve you really well as a storyteller mm. because you're already really picking up on other people's like emotions and like vibes.
It's like a sixth sense almost yeah. in that mm-hmm. sense. Cool. I have just a few more questions. I guess like what is a dream for you? What do you have like an end goal or like I don't know, when you look back on your life at a certain point, is there something more that you want to achieve or like you want to be or anything like that?
Wow. I don't know. I think this is all the stuff that's happened has been beyond my wildest dreams, you know, of being able to help make a movie and all that stuff. It's been like crazy. It's been amazing. I would want to keep on telling stories and keep on feeling connected to people, I mm-hmm. guess. Mm-hmm. I have definitely an interest in like aesthetic. And so I would want to, I don't know, that's part of what's exciting to me about filmmaking too, is being able to make worlds come to life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sure, like I'm into like stationery and books and like home design and like I like design
uh-huh.
so that would be a cool uh-huh. thing for me to explore into a little uh-huh. bit which I get to do all that when I write my stories
right
like I think when you read To All the Boys you don't think about at first glance you wouldn't think about what is her wardrobe like, what does her world look like, because it's contemporary realistic, right? And mm-hmm. so I think people assume, okay, for Harry Potter, for Hunger Games, we got a like certain look, we know exactly what right. we're doing. And so people put less thought into how it should look uh-huh. when it's contemporary realistic because you're going, it's just my world.
Right.
But I think it's also important to make you understand who the character is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being able to do more of that in different ways uh-huh. would be exciting to me.
Okay, cool. Well, I look forward to seeing interior designer Jenny Han in the coming years. So to kind of start wrapping things up, mm-hmm. we have a little segment for you where we're going to make you choose your most iconic pairs.
Okay.
So the way it works is, for example, we're going to give you Ross and Rachel of Friends
mm-hmm.
or Edward and Bella of Twilight. And we're going to make you choose. I know, your face just looked very pained.
Well, I am actually a Rachel and Joey person.
Rachel and Joey person.
That will get me in trouble, I know. If you talk about Friends on social media, people uh-huh. feel so strongly about certain pairings and uh-huh. stuff. And I'm a Rachel Joey.
Rachel and Joey. We can say that, but you still have to pick here Ross and Rachel.
Oh my gosh, you're so strict.
I know.
Fine. I guess I'll go Edward and Bella.
Okay. Edward and Bella versus Mario and Princess Peach from Nintendo.
Oh. I'll go Mario and Princess Peach.
Okay, Mario and Princess Peach mm-hmm. versus Carrie and Big in Sex and the City.
Oh. Well, Aiden is in our movie. He's a dad.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So that's funny. But I'll go Carrie and Big.
Okay, Carrie and Big versus Jim and Pam of The Office.
I'll go Carrie and Big.
Carrie and Big versus Kim Jandi and Gu Junpyo of Boys Over Flowers. K-drama.
Oh, I gotta go Jandi.
Jandi, yeah, okay. Yeah. Jandi and Junpyo, right? Yeah. Jandi and Junpyo.
Like, Gu Junpyo!
Yeah. Jandi and Junpyo of Boys Over Flowers.
Yeah.
Versus Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy of Pride and Prejudice.
Oh. Wait, the Colin Firth, Jennifer Ely version or just like…
No, just the book.
Period. I gotta go with them.
Okay. Yeah. Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy against Romeo and Juliet.
Elizabeth.
Okay. Elizabeth and Darcy versus Noah Calhoun and Ally Hamilton of The Notebook.
I'm sticking with my…
Okay.
Mr. Darcy.
All right. So, Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy versus Joey and Rachel.
Oh, you're a sly one. I'm sticking with Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Elizabeth and Darcy versus Lara Jean and Peter Kavinsky.
Wow. You're so evil.
I know. We went there.
You went there. Well, you know what? I'm sticking with… I'm just kidding. Now I'm being disloyal to my own creation.
I mean, we could be like, oh, you're so humble. Or we could say, you know, either way.
I just think it's iconic.
Right.
So, Elizabeth and Mr. Wow. Lucy.
All right. There you go, you guys. You have it. You're just very humble. You know, for a lot of people, for a lot of people who are in a younger generation, it's definitely going to be Lara Jean and Peter.
Well, that's really nice.
You know, so.
Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on this episode. It's been a pleasure. I hope it wasn't too crazy or too painful.
No,
or,
the windows did not break.
I know.
We're still alive.
Honestly, I'm a little disappointed. I wanted to see some rain and like be like, ah! But yeah, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're incredibly busy. You're in the middle of shoots and you made time for us. So thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. This has been amazing.
It's been a pleasure. Can you tell us where we can find you online or how people can keep up with you?
You can find me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active.
Okay.
At Jenny Han. I'm also on Twitter, but Instagram is like home base.
At Jenny Han on Instagram. Again, thank you so much to Jenny for joining us. If you guys please go ahead and follow us at The Dive Studios to keep up with upcoming guests and make requests for who you want myself, Eric, to talk to, because I like to do that.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to make some requests.
Please do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for Jenny. Have an amazing wrap to your shooting
thank
here.
You.
And I can't wait for the next few movies and your books.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have a good one. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.